Hello there, and welcome back to the Truly Horrible NBA podcast.
I'm
your host, Connor Allen, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Daniel Porter.
Incredibly happy to be here. Thank you all.
So, just to start off this week, you know, as always, as we start off our week, we read the reviews from this week.
Well, it's just the review of the week, right? Although we might eventually develop a backlog because we've been getting so many reviews, you know. When you're just over here drowning in five-star reviews, after a while it becomes hard to even pick which one is the best.
Yeah, we just read one. We read them all eventually. It's just we only read one at the start of each episode.
Fair. All right, go in.
So, title, kind of surprising, from Banana Boat Boy.
Yeah.
Great nickname. A friend of mine who knows one of the hosts asked me to listen. I didn't have high expectations, but I was pleasantly surprised. I'm not nearly as radical about rebuilding teams as these guys seem to be, but for what it was a good listen. If you're interested in the nitty-gritty details of rebuilding teams, or if one of your teams are featured, it's worth a listen.
Wow. Thanks, Banana Boat Boy. I mean, you know, that was kind of a backhanded compliment. I don't understand why our proficiency has to be surprising to you, but
whatever. I'll take it.
We'll take it.
Five stars, it's all good. You can say mean things about us if you leave five stars.
Yeah, so definitely if you are listening, if you like the pod and you haven't left a five-star review yet, it's pretty easy. Connor here is going to give a brief tutorial of how to leave a review on iTunes.
Yeah.
So you can just follow right along and on your phone.
Yep. So you'll go to your iTunes podcasting app. Something like 80% of people listen to that.
You probably know. If you don't, true. It's, I guess this is mostly just for Apple people.
But that's fine. That's where most people listen. Okay. So you click the search tab. You search in all podcasts. Truly Horrible.
Not the either. That's another thing we need to clarify. But you're already listening, so clearly you found us.
Yep. So Truly Horrible. And then the Truly Horrible NBA podcast will pop up under show. You'll click on that. You'll scroll down, and you'll see ratings and reviews. At that point, there's going to be a little bit under there that says write a review. You cannot access the reviews from the tab where you listen. You can only do it from the search bar. And so go there, leave a five-star review. We'll read it. You can advertise your own podcast if you want. We don't care. We'll read anything.
Speaking of, we're also selling ads. Name your price, you know? And please don't make us read anything that would, you know, like embarrass our sterling reputation. But otherwise, name your price.
Yeah.
Try us.
And then the final thing is follow us on Twitter at @THNBApodcast. Once again, that is @THNBApodcast.
We really need some more Twitter followers to make us look more legitimate. We were getting some engagement with NBA Twitter celebrity Ben Dietrich a couple weeks back.
Yeah, actually, Ben Dietrich, interestingly enough, Ben Dietrich of the Brian Colangelo burner
the guy
Twitter
who broke account. The who wrote the big story for The Ringer about Brian Colangelo's many Twitters.
Actually discussed Brian Colangelo's performance as a GM with us. So if you want to go back, look on the Twitter feed, kind of see what Ben Dietrich said while he was in the midst of that investigative reporting. You know, I think it's interesting to check out. So
especially in light of, I mean, that was before the article came out.
Yep,
in
exactly.
In light of that, it adds another layer. And also, you know, we pledged our support to J.R. Smith.
Yeah, I mean, come on. We don't watch the playoffs, so we don't know why everyone's so upset, but we're ride or die with J.R.
Exactly. From what I've seen through the many, many hours of regular season basketball I've watched, J.R. Smith is the man.
Exactly. So on today's episode, our focus is going to be looking back on the Atlanta Hawks rebuild. So for us, you know, we identified the Atlanta Hawks rebuild ultimately as starting when Al Horford left in the 2016 offseason. So we're going to start
This is probably like the freshest rebuild out of any of the teams that are in R5.
Easily.
So, I mean, it speaks to what the Hawks are doing right. Because they've been able to go from, you know, like one of the best teams, at least regular season record-wise, one of the best teams in the league, win the 15-16 and 14-15 seasons, and they've been able to completely tear it down. They did lose some stars for no assets, which you don't really want to ever do that in the NBA, but they've gone from good to bad very quickly. And one of the things that we hate to see is when teams are just too invested in, like, somewhat limited successes. You know, it's kind of like what Memphis tried to do this past year or something, although they ended up having injuries, so they were bad. But there's a lot of teams that are too invested in trying to keep together playoff teams that were never even that good and that are now clearly past their prime.
Yeah.
Rather than doing that, the Hawks were like, no, we're going to bottom out and be terrible.
That's
how you end up on this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Really well done. Like the point is, like, going from a playoff team to being a truly horrible team in 2 years is really good. Like, that's what you want to do. Because ultimately, we like to talk here how the NBA team has a cycle. You know, there's contention cycles and there's rebuilding cycles. And the transition points between being contending and being a rebuilding team is where teams get stuck often.
You really don't want to be stuck in the middle there.
You want that downward slope from contending to rebuilding to be as steep as possible, taking as little of time as possible. If you think about, you know, a rebuilding team cycle as like on a timeline, actually, you want that to be as short as possible, so as steep as possible. And then ideally, actually, if you look at the most successful rebuilds, that line up happens really quickly too. They lay down at the bottom for a while, they pick up picks, and like the Sixers, you go from 28 wins to 52. That's how it works. So
I don't ever remember a team that was like a playoff team with a certain core, and then that core started to get worse, and they, you know, had a lower seed or fell out of the playoffs, that was then able to thrust themselves back into contention with the same core.
Right.
I don't remember. Once you're done, you're done.
Right.
And the teams aren't willing to
recognize
that.
You can have a bad season, maybe, but then come back a little. But it's like you're not really ever a true title contender at that point if you're missing the playoffs with the core. It's all over at that point.
Or even, you know, I mean, 6-8 seed. You're not really in it either.
But let's dig in. So we're just going to start at the beginning of the 2016 offseason. So there's a few moves before Al Horford officially leaves, but ultimately it all is centered around Al Horford leaving. So on June 23rd, 2016, the Hawks drafted DeAndre Bembry at 21. They drafted Isaiah Cordonnier at 44. Then they sold the 54th pick, which became Kay Felder, to the Cavs for $2.4 million. And then the final big move is that they traded Jeff Teague to Indiana. George Hill went to Utah. And the 12th pick, which became Torian Prince, went to the Hawks.
So let's just start. We'll do those moves one at a time. We'll start with Bembry. So I have liked some of what I've seen from Bembry. You know, he can guard threes and fours effectively in the league. He's clearly got a good body, good feel for the game. He's not going to be a star or anything, but it's pretty easy to see him as like a solid role player. I could see a role for him on a playoff team, maybe in the lieu of like, who are some, maybe like what Marcus Morris does or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, he needs to shoot better. He's such a zero at that point that you just can't be productive if you're
true.
A zero.
You can't play in the playoffs if you can't shoot. I am assuming, especially because he plays for the Hawks and they've done a decent job of player development, you'd think that he'll be able to add it, but if he doesn't, then that really limits his ceiling.
Well, I mean, it's a completely different coaching staff. The player development stuff.
True, that was Budenholzer stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
And I just think, and the other thing with Bembry is he had a really injury-filled second season. You know, he missed so many games. He was playing in the G League some, but I mean, really just wasn't playing very much at all. Was injured on and off. Every time he would come back, he'd suddenly miss another 4 to 6 weeks. And then in February, of course, there was the incident where he got arrested for speed racing.
Going out. Which, I mean, you know, we're not really like trying to take the moral high ground on this podcast or anything. Like, look, he's young. He's got a lot of money. He's trying to have fun.
I drove fast when I was young and dumb too. Yeah, exactly. If I had a nice, expensive car, I would drive really fast.
Probably would have been arrested for street racing, Connor.
Yeah.
So, but still, you know, it's like a minor red flag, but it's not like he has a pattern of like destructive behavior or bad decision making or anything. So I wouldn't worry too much about that.
Yeah, I wouldn't classify this as a huge red flag. It'd be more like a, you know, yellow flag, you know, where like, all right, that's a little concerning, but it's nothing to freak out yet. It's, you know, like Jahlil Okafor speeding over the Franklin Bridge in Philadelphia was a big deal because it was like the third incident.
Right,
in
and he also was like recorded punching a guy in the face on the street.
But
you can't do that.
Then Isaiah Cordonnier, 44th pick. Didn't turn into much. A little disappointing from the 44th pick, but
yeah, that's like a real second. I mean, there are guys drafted in that range who become contributors, but still, it's a second round pick.
And then they sold the 54th pick.
This is one of those weird things where like they sold that pick to Cleveland for $2.4 million. Cleveland paid $2.4 million to draft Kay Felder so they could pay him like $600,000. You know, don't you think that's messed up?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it shows that like the Cavs clearly value the surplus value of the 54th pick over the
lifetime. Or they wanted that specific guy, too. But Kay Felder, is he even on the team anymore?
No.
I know he got some minutes last year.
He's out of the league. I do think, look, I don't have a huge issue with selling the 54th pick for $2.4 million. I understand that there are things like operating expenses. And if your team's actually about to go rebuild, and the idea of like generating $2.4 million extra in revenue is like important for allowing the financial stability of a team to actually like go and do the important things in rebuilding, which is like be bad, get a top five pick, maybe, you know, trade away older veterans who help you win to get pick up future assets, everything that are first. Like, it's worth it. So,
right. As a fan, you never love seeing a pick just traded for cash. I mean, you know, certainly like Phoenix and Minnesota and some of these teams have done it over and over the years and traded at, like Phoenix used to trade first round picks for cash back in the 2000s. And that's just really bad. But in this case, it's not a big deal.
Yep. And then the big move clearly was the Jeff Teague trade, where they traded Jeff Teague and ultimately got the 12th pick in return. Look,
That's a move that you make if you know Al Horford is leaving. So, and yeah. They did. I mean, it sucks that they lost Al Horford for nothing. It's nice getting the 12th pick back, and especially Torian Prince. I mean, that's way more useful to them
than one Jeff year Teague. Jeff Teague. I mean, for me, that's the grade I gave that transaction is an A. That's a clear A for me. You know, this is the only one. And Bembry's pick, I guess, to give a grade for that, I'd give like a C right now. You know, it's like
C plus. Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's the 21st pick. He still has some potential. We'd have to look at who else was drafted in that same range in the 2016
draft. Well, I don't,
draft.
You know, it's, I don't even it's really still early it based too. On who was around there. It's just, yeah, it could work out. Look, it's probably a C because I'm not ready to jump to judgment and it's only the 21st pick, but you're not thinking about him as a starter long-term in any way.
He's not like a building block.
But, I mean, this Torian Prince trade where they ultimately get Torian Prince for Jeff Teague is, I mean, that's such a win. I mean, we think of Torian Prince as one of the building blocks of this team moving
forward. Torian Prince is definitely one of their most valuable assets, for sure. Yeah, it's really easy to project a role for him on a good team. He already does a lot of things well in terms of shooting, handling the ball, playing defense. And again, he's one of those wings. You can never have too many wings in the NBA right now.
Yep, exactly. I mean, just, yeah. So I really like that move and just trading a, you know, 28, 29-year-old Jeff Teague for a first-round pick.
When you know you're about to be bad.
And he has 1 year left on his contract. Like, that's what smart teams do. You know, that was really good.
But the next couple moves, yeah. On the other hand, some of the free agent signings they made in 2016 do not suggest that they are ready to be bad.
Nope.
It's kind of disappointing.
On July 7th, 2016, they signed Kent Bazemore to a 4-year, $70 million contract with the last year being a player option.
Shout out to Nate Duncan. He's going to pick that up.
yeah. I gave that a D+.
Right. I mean, honestly, I wish... Like, basically, the best thing you could do in 2016 was just nothing. Yep. Like, there were hardly any decent contracts handed out anywhere in the league. That seemed like fair value in 2016, I guess, for Bazemore. But it's also, like, they suck. Bazemore's not helping them. It's going to be really difficult to trade him.
Yeah, and I mean, as we've talked about, I mean, the reason that teams should have conceptually understood in the 2016 offseason that they shouldn't have been signing anyone is that because $30 million of cap space for each team, or no, I think it was 25, was ultimately just generated out of thin air in a way and entered into the league, and everyone else's contract was under the old salary cap, so they were proportionally lower contracts. The amount of available cap space at that time was a disproportionate amount of available cap space that there would ever be in any other time throughout the course
and
of this collective bargaining
agreement. I think the issue
is
people thought it was going to keep going up. But even still.
Even if it had gone up as much as people projected it, these contracts would still have been negative contracts because they were only fair market value contracts when there is a surplus
of space.
Of space,
I agree. And you never want to be in that position where you're spending money just to spend money.
Right.
And signing Kent Bazemore to 4 years, $70 million with a player option definitely qualifies as spending money, just to spend money. And so does the other big free agent signing they made that summer.
Yeah, where they...
Dwight Howard.
Yeah, on July 12th, 2016, they signed Dwight Howard to a 3-year, $70.5 million
That was a
contract.
Couple days after Al Horford left. So I guess they're like, well, we have all this cap space we thought we were going to be giving to Al. We might as well bring somebody else in and try to stay good and stay relevant.
Right,
because
they
Dwight's
had
from
Paul
Atlanta.
Millsap still, and they had Kent Bazemore, who had a really big breakout year. I mean, I understand why they didn't want to let Kent Bazemore go. It's just that contract was still bad. And the idea is, oh, well, we can still dive in and compete. Because even though this rebuild has actually started with Al Horford leaving and the way we conceptually think about it, the Hawks, as like an organization, didn't really accept
they
their rebuilding until next
it.
Summer.
Yeah.
But we want to start from here. And I give the Dwight Howard signing an F, ultimately because they traded away Dwight Howard the next summer and brought back like the horrendous Miles Plumlee contract. They viewed it as so valuable to get off Howard that they would take back that terrible contract.
Which is a year longer than Howard's.
A year longer. I mean, look, it's only $12.5 million, but it was, I mean, it's a horrendous contract.
Yeah, that was a disaster.
And then the next move, on July 14th, 2016, they signed Chris Humphries to a 1-year, $4 million deal.
I mean, that's a good deal. I don't mind that at all. It's not really going to make or break you one way or the other, but Chris Humphries is a demonstrated, especially at that point too, he's getting a little old now, but he's been demonstrating for a long time he can get rebounds in the NBA.
Look, in years, not dollars, as you know, Dan LaRue says always. Look, 1 year doesn't hurt you, not a big deal. On the other hand, their next move, where they signed Malcolm Delaney to a 2-year, $5 million deal.
Yeah, it's kind of disappointing, I guess. Although, I mean, he
looked
still
really
pretty
good
young,
that first
exactly.
year.
That seemed like it could have been a nice buy low deal.
And it just didn't work out. But yeah,
I don't
really
mind
that
too much.
So for me, I gave the Humphries signing a C, and I gave the Delaney signing a C as well. And there's, you know.
It's just kind of what you should expect. Yeah, like roster filler, but not bad contracts or anything.
Yep. And then on October 26, 2016, they signed Dennis Schroeder to a 4-year, $70 million deal. So clearly, they actually traded Teague because they thought Schroeder was the heir apparent and they were ready to move on. This is a D for me. This is a terrible contract. It's approaching
an
F.
Schroeder is probably one of the worst starting point guards in the league.
I wouldn't want him on my team.
He also thinks he's really good.
I don't think
he's definitely not good to have a guy whose perception of themselves is out of line with their actual production. And also on a bad team, like, you don't want a point guard that's just going to be looking for himself and trying to create for himself all the time. Like, you want somebody that's going to be working and developing chemistry and rapport with Torian Prince and trying to figure out what shots he needs and how to get him in his rhythm. And Schroeder is just, like, as far as point guard position goes, he's pretty selfish. He doesn't play great defense. He's also injury prone.
Yeah, and he's already trying to force his way out of Atlanta.
And he's not happy there at all.
After 1 year of this 4-year contract.
It's been 2 years.
Well, this is an extension, so he actually had 1 year left on his rookie deal in the extension. But yeah, so it's just like, come on. You know, this is a bad move. Why they felt the need to extend him is another question. You know, these are the one of the guys. They should have let him go into restricted free agency. He probably would have gotten less. They were clearly spooked by the summer of 2016. But once again, if teams had conceptually understood this idea that I keep talking about, of how there was an excess amount of cap space that would never again reach those levels.
And some teams, I think, did.
And some smart teams did. There were some teams that didn't
spend in 2016. But it's also disappointing. Some of the teams we think of as smart, like the Spurs, for instance, or spending money in 16.
Yeah, weren't making, I mean, look, the Paul Gasol signings, which is so later, bad. But there's just stuff they were doing that was questionable. And then on January 7th, 2017, the Hawks traded Kyle Korver to the Cavs for Mo Williams, Mike Dunleavy, and a 2019 first, top 10 protected.
So, I mean, I remember, I've seen this trade get killed a lot. People love to be like, the Hawks just gave Korver to the Cavs. Well, here's the thing. The Hawks at that point were a bad team, and Korver didn't have... I mean, it was already... The writing was on the wall, but Korver didn't have as much value to them as he did to a team like the Cavs. I mean, LeBron uses Korver in a way that few players in the league would.
Yep.
He always knows where Korver is on the court when they're on offense, you know? Like, it's just part of LeBron's insane spatial awareness of the game. And also, that 2019 first... I mean, look, we think that LeBron, there's a good chance he's leaving, depending on how these finals go. But we think there's a good chance he's leaving. That 2019 first, I mean, the rest of the Cavs with Kevin Love, assuming he sticks around, they could still be kind of like that 11-12 range.
I mean, that's the dream. I think that pick, I think they blow it up completely.
And they'll be horrible.
Yeah. But and then, so I think there's a chance it just becomes 2 seconds and it never conveys to the Hawks. But still.
Still, it's Kyle Korver. He's late in his career. It did not seem like Kyle Korver had as much in the tank. Left in the tank, as he's proven that he does. I mean, he's been like their third option at times this playoffs, but he was not playing that well in 2017. Playoffs,
people are saying that Kyle Korver's the
third
option.
That's a good point.
I haven't actually seen that on the court. but the other thing with Korver at this point is he only had 1 year left on his deal. He was an expiring contract. They turned an expiring contract into a potential first-round pick, which has the upside, once again, of being the 11th pick. Look, it would take some crazy turn of event for the Cavs to ultimately somehow finish at 11 and not tank their way lower. But look, maybe they tank their way to 9 with the new lottery system.
But also, we know how proud Dan Gilbert is.
Yeah.
That's the thing, too. It wouldn't surprise me at all. He doesn't seem like that good of an owner if he was the kind of guy who tried to, like, still be good after LeBron left. I mean, he said they were going to win a title before the so-called king when LeBron left the first time. So who knows what we're going to get from Dan Gilbert.
Yep. And then on January 18th, 2017, this is just a smaller move, but they traded Mo Williams in cash to the Nuggets for the rights to check Akayo. But the important thing is actually is it created a $2.2 million trade exception. So this is one of those things where they took the Mo Williams contract, and because of the incentive structure of these teams to send out money and everything, the Hawks were able to create a trade exception for $2.2 million. They never end up using it, but just like keeping that optionality and creating it is just good.
It's more useful than having Mo Williams on your roster in 2017.
Yep, exactly. And then on February 22nd, 2017, they traded Tiago Splitter in 2 seconds for Ersan Ilyasova, and the 2 seconds they traded out became the 46th and 50th pick in 2017, and the second they got back was the 60th pick.
So
that's a D- for me. They were
It's basically, I think it was seen as kind of like a salary dump, right? Didn't Splitter have sort of a bad contract, and he wasn't playing for them at all?
They were both expirings, though.
Okay.
I recall.
So what's the, it's a small move, but losing the 46th and 50th pick to get the 60th pick and exchanging two players, neither of which are really that significant in the long run.
Trying to contend, you know, because
they thought Ilyasova was going to help them. They were trying to push for the playoffs.
Yeah,
right?
They traded Korver, and then they went on this hot run, and that's why they never traded Millsap, and then they traded first on Ilyasova to bring in extra help and everything. It's just like...
Yeah, that's pretty bad, because then you double down, you lose Horford for nothing, and then the next offseason lose Millsap for nothing.
Yep. But
they could have gotten a lot for Millsap at the 2017 deadline, too.
I mean, maybe not a lot, but at least
another guy.
And another guy or something like that.
Who would be a part of this rebuild. Yep. I mean, a team would have given up a good young player for Millsap, for sure. Yep.
So then on May 25th, 2017, they hired Travis Schlenk. For me, right now, I would give his grade a B-. I'm not sure what to think of it yet.
Incomplete.
Definitely an incomplete.
He's done some good things.
But also some bad things. Look, we'll get to, like, his very first move is one of my least favorite trades of the past, like, 10 years, just in, like, look, it's, like, not devastating. It's not, like, a Kings move or...
Well, let's get into that. Bit, I mean, yeah, I don't think it's as bad as you do, but he's talking about the Dwight Howard trade, which we already kind of hinted at.
So they traded Dwight Howard and the 31st pick for Marco Bellinelli, Miles Plumlee, and what and the 31st and the 41st pick.
And those were in the 2017 draft. In the 2017 draft. This was happening June 20th, 2017.
Yeah, that's an F for me. It just is. The fact that you take on an extra year of Miles Plumlee's contract for Dwight Howard's. Look, if Dwight Howard was as
and
big of a...
And move back in the second
and
round.
And move back in the draft. If Dwight Howard was as big of a locker room cancer as like he must have been for them to want to make this move, cut him. Just actually cut him. Don't stretch his salary or anything and just bite that $20 million on your books for 2 years and just be like, this really sucks, but we're just going to ride this out.
Well,
instead of
Plumlee really contributes nothing.
Nothing. And he's an extra $12.5 million for like one extra year. That's devastating. You just can't lock up your books like that.
I mean, they did get off, I don't know, we'd be killing them for having Dwight too, is the thing. Like, that's a really bad contract.
It would just
at least it's less overall money.
And it's
like,
an expiring this year. It's a $20 million expiring contract this coming
so
summer.
You probably
there's a lot of value in
that.
There's like, you know, I just like...
Clearly, they just, like, Dwight had poisoned.
Yes. Things were bad.
And Schlenk wanted to get off that. Like, it was the previous organ, like, the previous regime's decision.
But, yeah. And then June 22nd, 2017 was the draft. The Hawks drafted John Collins at 19. That's an A. That's a great pick.
Oh, yeah. I'm a big John Collins fan, personally. Look, I just like to watch the guy play. And on a rebuilding team, a bad team, especially having some people that really like play with joy and are fun, I think that can be infectious. I think that John Collins is a great athlete. It seems like he tries hard. I don't know if long-term he's a starter or a bench player yet, but I definitely, it's obvious that there's a place for him in the league. And so that's pretty good for the 19th pick.
Interesting. So we got some feedback, some listener feedback, actually, about our talk about John Collins earlier, where we both kind of talked about how we neither of us viewed him as a potential star, but as much more of like a complimentary, like his ceiling being like a starter, like a fourth or fifth guy in a championship team. And kind of the point was made is that, you know, between his, like he is really agile and his length, there's the way you can project him to be like a five of the future. Is there any way we're underselling his upside, or would you still stand by the idea that you view him as like a fourth or fifth starter as his ceiling?
I just haven't seen it. And granted, if he were playing with a great distributor, maybe he just would become a lob guy. But I haven't seen it on the offensive end in terms of like a diverse offensive game. He will shoot threes, especially corner threes. I haven't looked at his stats recently on them. It doesn't seem like, you know, he's a guy who you want shooting threes that aren't wide open. But that would potentially help his offensive game a lot if he could flesh out his perimeter game a little bit. It's hard for me personally to see him as a star, like I said. I really think that he's more of an energy guy, role player. He could be a star role player, like a really good role player.
That's where I fall down too, because my concern is I don't think there's enough. I haven't seen enough in terms of creation. He's not really creating for you on offense, and he doesn't seem at this point in time, maybe I'll be proven wrong, but it doesn't seem at this point in time that he's going to become an elite defender in this league.
No. Who's the comparison? You know, who's the guy who's currently a star who you could see John Collins start to like morph into?
See, it's tough. I can't think of like a star.
He's not like the same. He's not a physical beast like Capella. Not quite. I mean,
no.
He's a beast, but not. Capella's got to be a couple inches taller and heavier.
Yeah, and Collins. But look, I mean, maybe Collins puts on weight and he does become a guy like a Capella. But like Capella's probably the third best guy in the Rockets. Maybe. You know, it's tough.
But he was getting played off
the
court.
The
Here's the
player
thing.
On the Rockets.
Capella was getting played off the court in the Warriors series. You know, I just worry about any center.
Yeah, he supposedly was getting played off the court.
That's true.
That.
I didn't actually, of course, catch it.
Look, importantly, it's a great pick and great value at 19. And that's like, look.
Yeah, if they do decide to, like, Collins, they might trade him eventually, but he definitely would have appeal. They could definitely get value for him.
Yep. And then they drafted Tyler Dorsey at 41, and they drafted Alpha Kappa at 60.
Great name.
Yeah.
Alpha Kappa, I think.
Yeah.
Hard to say. Any names that we butcher.
Our apologies. We generally start to get names once guys get some minutes in the league and everything, you hear announcers saying, and you just get that repetition. It's the way to like really remember it. Tyler Dorsey played some as a rookie. You know,
Dorsey, I liked him in college, man. Tyler Dorsey's got some game. I don't know if he's actually an NBA player, if he's just like a guy who gets to get a shot on a bad team. But again, it speaks well that they're bringing in guys like that.
Yep.
You know, I could see him developing.
And then on July 6th, 2017... they traded Washington's 2019 second for Jamal Crawford, Diamond Stone, and the Houston Rockets 2018 first, which became the 30th pick.
Jamal Crawford obviously was never going to stay there. Diamond Stone, former first round pick, but at this point it's pretty much over for him. And then, yeah, you move up from what's probably going to be a mid second round pick. I mean, how do we think Washington's going to be next year? Okay, they could be good, but they won't be bad probably. But anyway, you end up getting the 30th pick in 2018. That's a nice
deal. Look, the upside, look, that pick could have, I think it was lottery protected, if I recall. So, I mean, it could have been the...
I mean, the Rockets were...
They were amazing, but
probably
what if,
not going to be
what
bad
if Chris
this
Paul
year?
Gets hurt? Chris Paul and what
or
if James
Chris
Harden...
Paul doesn't come and James gets hurt or something like with Chris
Well, this
Paul,
trade was after this was after. Part of the Chris Paul.
Oh yeah, so it's like that same
ordeal. Yeah,
frenzy.
But it's just it could have been something more. So I think this is a fine gamble, and they took back Jamal Crawford's contract where he had $14.2 million 17-18, and then he had $3 million guaranteed in 18-19. They bought him out. He gave back $4 million, so his cap hit for 17-18 went down to $10.9 million. And in 18-19, it's $2.3 million. Look, that's good.
How many different teams are going to be paying Jamal Crawford? You know,
yeah, right?
Man, I mean, good for him. You know, yep. Great guy.
And then July 13th, 2017, Paul Millsap officially signed with the Nuggets. I think that was announced much earlier, but that's when they officially signed. Once again, it's a real bummer that they let Al Horford and Paul Millsap go. I mean, two just incredibly valuable pieces they got nothing back for.
It's crazy that they're in as good of shape as they are, although that really speaks to why they don't have any guys who we think project as future stars.
Yep.
Is because, and maybe they'll get one in this year's draft. This is kind of their first chance to. But when you let Millsap and Horford go for nothing, you're not doing yourself any favors.
Yep. And then July 21st, 2017, they signed Ersan Ilyasova to a one-year, $6 million contract. This doesn't make a ton of sense to me. Look, I don't have that big of an issue signing a veteran, even giving them up to 1 year, $6 million. Like, that's not something that I freak out about. It's fine as long as it's just 1 year to bring in veteran guys for the locker room and everything. And he had been around the year before, and they must have liked him. But it's just like, you're clearly going to be bad. Why are you trying to have Ilyasova help you be better than you actually are going to be? I mean, this was... You
know, the nice thing about that is at least they ended up... Oh, they didn't even trade Ilyasova. They just
waived they bought him out.
I really thought that was a trade, but Oh, man. Yeah, that was a waste of money.
And then July 25th, 2017, they signed Mike Muscala to a two-year, $10 million deal.
Speaking of waste of money.
Second-year player option. Which,
Roseville, Minnesota's own Mike Muscala.
Yeah, that's an F. That's horrible.
That's just a waste of money. I mean, there's so many centers around, too. We're gonna see guys who are way better than Mike Muscala, who play the center position, sign for that kind of money.
Give the minimum.
Or less, yeah.
I think, and Mike Muscala, look, it's 2 years. Why are you giving him 2 years? He would have jumped at a one-year... $5 million contract,
right?
I think. And
they weren't
not,
really bidding against anyone, I don't think.
Yeah, really bad. And then on September 5th, 2017, they signed Quinn Cook. That's an A. That's a great signing. Liked him. And then, unfortunately, on October...
Did he ever actually play for them in a regular season
unfortunately,
game?
Unfortunately, on October 4th, 2017, they waived Quinn Cook, which is an F, because he now gets minutes, supposedly, in the playoffs for the Warriors, which means he probably would have helped this Hawks team.
True. I mean, who knows, you know, how much of that is like the Warriors system. Maybe if he trades places with somebody, he's like not as good. But he has shown potential. I mean, it's not like the Hawks have a ton of combo guard toolsy. But I don't know, if Tyler Dorsey's on the Warriors this season, for instance, like you think Tyler Dorsey would be good? Maybe.
Maybe. And then that same day, and the reason they actually waived Quinn Cook is that they made the trade with the Cavs where they sent the rights to two guys in Europe. The Cavs for Kay Felder, Richard Jefferson, a 2019 second and a 2020 second.
Brought back Kay Felder.
Yeah, true.
Into the fold.
I
mean, that was just a salary dump for Cleveland.
Yeah, but you know, the Hawks had open cap space. They
and
got
you get
2 seconds.
2 seconds out of it. Yeah.
Look, I'm in favor of that. That's a good trade. Nothing to complain about there. You know, this is Schlenk did a lot of good stuff where he used their cap space to take back bad money and bring in assets.
This is one of the things that we liked about the process Sixers. It's just like all the little moves and the constant roster turnover, just trying to find diamonds in the rough and figuring that, you know, you just keep stacking up more and more second round picks in future years. And that's, you know, a lot of NBA teams undervalue second round picks, but there are some useful guys you can find there.
Yep. And then their trade deadline was a little disappointing. They traded Luke Babbitt to the Heat for Okaro White, and they waived Okaro White. They traded a heavily protected second for Sheldon Mack and cash, and then they waived Sheldon Mack. So those were both just salary dumps for the other team. Where they then waived guys. It's disappointing because they didn't trade Bellinelli or Ilyasova and get anything back for them.
Right.
And they definitely could have gotten
especially
seconds back.
When we saw those guys play with the Sixers, it was so clear that they were useful NBA players still. I mean, yeah, you could have got seconds for them.
Yep. And so then on February 9th, 2018, they waived Marco Bellinelli. And then on February 26th, 2018, they waived Ilyasova. And those guys that you said ended up signing with the Sixers. And then on April 25th, 2018, they parted ways with Coach Bud. look, that's it's tough. I think Coach Bud is a really good coach.
Clearly, I like him. I would like. I'll be rooting for him wherever he goes next.
Well,
I
mean, the whole like he's gonna be great with the Bucks. Developing wings around the Giannis. It's sad he developed young guys really well. It's a big loss for the Hawks.
And
that's
He played smart. Like, yeah, I don't know. Their strategy, like, they always seemed like they were ahead of the curve. He got the most out of, like, you know, teams that probably weren't as talented as the results.
Yep. But, you know, that's kind of how it goes. There's not really... He wasn't going to stay around for the rebuild, and it's much more important for them to rebuild and start getting some top picks and getting some young talent in here than it is to have Coach Bud around. And so if that's the trade-off, like, it's a bummer, but that's how it goes. And then on May 11th, 2018, they hired Lloyd Pierce. We've talked about this a little before. Both of us... like this hire.
Yeah, we're definitely gonna be patient with him and give him a chance. And if, you know, if Budenholzer was really had his heart set on coaching a contending team, didn't want to go through a full rebuild, it makes a lot of sense to bring in somebody like Lloyd Pierce, give somebody fresh an opportunity with this young team. We think the Hawks are going to be very, very bad this season.
Yes.
It's really hard to see them not being terrible. I think whoever they take at number three, they should be trying to take a high upside guy who's a project who's not really gonna help them win this year.
And I hope that
they'll be bad. And hopefully they don't sign any veterans.
I hope they use their cap space to once again take back bad contracts and bring in draft picks. That's what they should do.
How much space do they have this summer?
Let me check one real quick. I don't have that on the top of my head. But I want to say it's about $20 million.
Okay. So they could also be potentially trying to lure restricted free agents.
Yes. I would be in favor of them targeting Aaron Gordon.
Like all our teams, we kind of want them to try to go for Aaron Gordon.
But... So actually, I undersold it. They're going to have about $30 million in cap space.
See, that's interesting. Think they get a meeting with LeBron?
Possibly, you know. No, definitely not. But yeah, look, if I was running the Hawks, I'd be trying to parlay that $30 million cap space into assets. And maybe I'd make a run. I would sniff around on if any restricted free agents I think I could get. But there's no restricted free agents that I just adore as a fit for this team and I feel like would be perfect for filling them up. And ultimately, there's no restricted free agents who are good enough who wouldn't get matched. That's worth, like, you don't want to, we talk about, you don't really want guys on that $15 million contract a year when you're rebuilding like this. You want to be bad, you want to be using that money to bring in assets, and you want to spend all that money at the end of the
cycle. Maybe if it's somebody who, like, has a lot of upside left and it could potentially turn into a bargain deal, then you're willing to take that risk.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what you tell yourself about every $15 million contract you're making, and ultimately they just...
Well, I mean, you know, I wouldn't be rushing to give $15 million to Marcus Smart. You know, there's some guys that...
I wouldn't give Marcus Smart more than like $6 or $7 million. I think he helps a lot, but you don't want to pay a guy...
And you definitely don't want Marcus Smart as a rebuilding team.
Nope.
He's a playoff player.
Yep. But yeah, so I think the Hawks, look, they're in really good shape. For a team that didn't get anything for Horford and Millsap.
Exactly. Given how much better shape they could be in, they're still in pretty solid shape.
Yeah, you got to feel good about it.
They have all their future picks and everything, which is a huge deal.
Yep.
They haven't done anything that's
crippling. And they have the 19th and 30th pick on addition to the third pick this year in the draft.
Yep. So they'll have a bunch of rookies next year. It'll be nice to, a couple years from now, when they start to get off, you know, the Schroeder contract, the Bazemore contract, the Plumlee contract, then it'll be interesting to see where they're at and if it's time for them to actually consider targeting a veteran and speeding up the timeline a little bit, or if they're still just in full rebuild mode.
I think summer of 2020 is probably when you try to make a splash.
But first we have to see. I mean,
you have to get close coming in. Yeah, exactly. But that's the summer you start spending. That's when Bazemore's contract and Plumlee's contract comes off the book. And look, you know, you just play it by ear, see what happens. But you got to feel good if you're a Hawks fan. And it's been a short rebuild. You know, this rebuild could really only take 3 to 4 years, which is short for an NBA rebuild.
Yep. Oh, yeah. They've done a good job, all things considered.
All right. So, well,
do we got anything else?
No, that's all.
All right. Thanks, as always, for listening. And obviously, we said a bunch of stuff at the top, like procedural stuff at the top of the pod. But if you want to get in contact with us, best way to do that is probably hit the Twitter DMs.
Yep. Right? Twitter DMs.
Say the Twitter
tweet
one more
at
time.
Us.
THNBA podcast.
Yeah, THNBA podcast. Just hit us up. Follow us. We'd love to talk to listeners. That's fun for us. So thank you very much. Have a great week.
And as always, we appreciate feedback.
Yep. Bye.